Israel is the number one enemy of Egypt, and the priority for Cairo now is to prevent the United States from meddling in its affairs. These are positions adopted by the Egyptian parliament. Is the new Egypt changing the geopolitical realities of the region? Stay with News Analysis.
Lawmakers in Cairo have unanimously approved a motion which describes Tel Aviv as the country's first and foremost enemy. The motion also calls for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador from Cairo, reviewing all agreements with Israel, as well as a halt to gas exports to Tel Aviv. Since the ouster of former dictator Hosni Mubarak last year, Egyptians have been pressing the military rulers to cut all ties with Israel. This culminated in several days of protests outside the Israeli embassy in Cairo last year. The protesters tried to break into the embassy building. Many of them were injured in clashes with security forces. The rise in anti-Israeli sentiments have been coupled with calls for preventing Washington from meddling in Egyptian affairs. Egypt is the largest receiver of aid from Washington after Tel Aviv. Many Egyptians want an end to decades-long blackmailing of their rulers by the U.S. in favor of Israel. Egyptian parliament, which is dominated by MPs from Islamic parties, announced earlier this week that the chamber is considering ways to stop receiving U.S. aid.
I hope that the U.S. Congress would listen to you and know that this is a revolutionary parliament and would never allow for a violation of Egypt's national sovereignty or interference in its domestic affairs.
The downfall of America and Israel's regional allies and establishment of democratic political system in Arab countries have sounded the alarm for many politicians in Washington and Tel Aviv. Some analysts believe the recent calls by Egyptian people's democratically elected representatives are in line with their Islamic aspirations and would endanger the U.S. and Israeli interests in the region.
Well, joining me now live from Gaza is Mr. Hani Al-Bassous, professor of the Islamic University of Gaza. And I'd also like to welcome our guest in Washington, Dr. Webster Tarpley, author and historian. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question will go to our guest in Gaza, Dr. Bassous. First of all, I want to start with the decision that was made by the Egyptian parliamentarians, the motion that said Israel is the first enemy of Egypt and Arabs. Mr. Bassous, why did the parliamentarians in Egypt make that conclusion?
Well, I think that the parliament in Egypt has made such a decision, such a motion to express its own willingness in the future to take steps to support the Palestinian people. They believe that Israel and the United States are the enemies for the Muslims in the region, and especially what has been done for the past few days in the Gaza Strip that led the Egyptian parliament to take such a step. I think the killing of innocent Palestinian people in Gaza by the Israeli machine and war planes has motivated the Muslim or Islamic MPs, are in the Egyptian parliament, which is dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood, to take such a motion. We can understand as well that the election, which was a few months ago, the result was for the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamic parties, which were won, which had some victory in the election. Mm-hmm. Now they would change Egyptian politics. We can understand in the past that Egypt was one of the main allies to Israel and the United States in the region. And we can understand that Egypt used to get funded from the United States because of its position supporting the Israeli side and its own contact and its own military and security connection with Israel. Nowadays, we can see that the situation in Egypt has changed, and it's going to change completely in the next few years as Islamic our Muslim Brotherhood would take over everything. I think the situation would change, but this is going to take more time.
Right, and that brings us to the next question. Dr. Tarpley, the question is, the decision or the motion has been put forward by the MPs in Egypt, but right now we know that there is veto power from the military rulers. So basically, Dr. Tarpley, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm having a bit of trouble with the sound, but please go ahead.
Okay. So I'll just repeat my question a bit more loudly. The question I want to put to you is, how will this motion affect Egypt's future ties with Tel Aviv? Do you think that it's going to take time yet, as long as the military rulership, at least, is still in power?
Well, the gesture is certainly understandable in the sense that the Israelis have been carrying out this brutal bombing campaign in Gaza. They've killed, as far as we can see from here, 25 people or more. There's a complete silence and indifference of the international community, or what Hillary Clinton calls the international community. When Syria defends itself against foreign death squads, they scream to high heaven. But when Israel does the same thing in the occupied territories, there's very little response. So the idea is to cut off the gas and to tell the Israeli ambassador to leave. And I'm sure that expresses the great rage and anger of the Egyptian masses. But on the other hand, it's not likely to have any effect, because the foreign policy is still in the hands of the SCAF, that is to say Tantawi, Enan, and these other generals that notoriously work with the United States. I would also point to the problem you have in the parliament now. You've got the at least the relative majority in the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
And they're facing a big political crisis. What do they do about the International Monetary Fund? The government right now, the Ganzouri government that they want to overthrow, is negotiating a $3.2 billion loan with the International Monetary Fund. And the public word is that the conditions are not that bad. But I think in reality, the conditions are pretty bad. And there's a great deal of resentment and hatred in Egypt, because people remember the neoliberal economic reforms of the 1990s and of the past decade that were imposed by the International Monetary Fund.
Right, so I'll just stop you there, Dr. Sharpe, if I may. I'd continue that discussion with you. But first, I'd like to introduce our guest that's just joined us live from Cairo, Mr. Ayman Salama, Egyptian with the Egyptian Council for Foreign Affairs and also a professor of international law. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Salama. Now, the question that I'd like to put to you is, again, with the motion that's been adopted by the Egyptian MPs against Tel Aviv and also against getting aid from the United States. Does this mean, however, that ties between Egypt and Tel Aviv and Washington is going to come to a halt? How will this actually affect these ties?
Actually, in general, even before the rising or the assuming control, assuming the parliamentary elections and being the parliamentary representatives of the whole Egypt, of the majority of the Egyptian people, we all, as experts, politicians, we anticipated such a standstill, such a tension between the Egyptian presumed government. I do not mean this government, but I mean after the withdrawal of the SCAF and the election of a new government, new elected parliamentary government by the representatives of the people, the majority of the Muslim Brothers. We did expect such tensions in the bilateral relationships between Egypt and Israel on one hand, and also between Egypt and the United States on the other, because we do have the Salafists, the Muslim Brothers, the majority of the parliament, which represent the real representation and the Egyptian political will of the mostly the whole Egyptian people, who had been humiliated by the former regime of Mubarak, who actually yielded, surrendered the Egyptian national interests for both
right, Mr.
Israel
Salama, if I could just
and
jump
the United
in here,
States of America.
Basically, Mr. Salama, the question is, though, right now people are saying that the military rulers are still in power and they're going to veto these decisions by the parliament. So a lot of people are saying until the military rulers are there, these are not going to have any effect. So basically, do you think that the military rulership is going to smoothly hand over power and this is going to lead to diminishment of ties, as you say?
To a larger extent, the SCAF, I mean the military council, is extensively trying to halt such tensions with the government, with, I mean, the Muslim Brothers in the parliament, because the SCAF fears the negative repercussions and consequences of, endangering or jeopardizing the ties with both United States of America and Israel. Mm. Probably we cannot actually assume that the SCAF is not going to hand over the right. power or pull over to its products unless there would be a radical and unexpected development in the domestic affair here in Egypt.
Right, let's go back to Gaza, Mr. Bassous. Speaking about what is at stake here for Israel, you say that Israel is facing a crisis in terms of the alliance that it had with the former regime in Egypt and now facing a new Egypt. We know that we had in the news that a court in Egypt recently sentenced two Israelis on charges of arms smuggling into Egypt. So how valid do you think these accusations are against Israel getting involved in fomenting unrest? What do you think it is doing to keep what it had before in Egypt?
Well, I think the situation would completely change between Egypt and Israel, and we can understand that the anti-Israeli sentiment existed in the Egyptian society a long time ago, but the Egyptian regime was containing this for the past many years under the regime of Hosni Mubarak. Now with the situation is changing, I think we're gonna expect some kind of tense situation between the two sides. This would come up in the next few years and in the next few months. Up to this moment, as you can see, that the Egyptian parliament taking some steps, taking some motions, accusing the Israeli side of trying to sabotage any Egyptian effort to keep their own security in Sinai.
So do you think, Mr. Bassous, think that Israel is actually getting itself involved and trying to meddle in some affairs, as some parliamentarians have been saying?
I think Israel now locked itself in the middle of nowhere. Israel, it was with Egyptian authorities in the past with a good contact and good relationship and having some funding from the United States. But today, the situation has completely changed, because what Israel has been doing, Israel has been trying to affect the security of the Egyptian people in Sinai. We can understand that Sinai itself, up to this moment, by the Camp David Accord, does not have the full control of the Egyptian authorities. Now, I think the Egyptian people will take some steps in the future in order to to cancel such an accord, and in which Israel would lose so much by doing so. And I think until the Israeli side takes some steps to change the whole situation by taking some steps to alleviate the suffering of the Palestinian people and to prove that it can go for peace at least, or can respect itself by not attacking the people of Gaza and the Palestinians, this would lead
to
something to be changed.
I'd just like to stop you there and go to Washington, our guest, Dr. Tarpley. I'd like to have your comment on this as well, Dr. Tarpley. We know the case of the Americans involved with the NGOs, and then they were accused of fomenting unrest. Now the military rulers were accused of giving in under pressure from America to release those American detainees. Basically, how valid do you think are these allegations of both Israeli involvement and American involvement in trying to create violence, unrest in Egypt? Do you think that they are doing that to protect their interests?
Well, certainly the National Endowment for Democracy is simply a machine for interfering in the political affairs of other countries, and this applies to the National Democratic Institute, which was once headed by Madeleine Albright, who thought that 1.5 million deaths in Iraq was a reasonable price to pay for what she called democracy, and the International Republican Institute. In many ways, the NED and these two faces that it has represents a kind of privatization of the old post-war, Cold War CIA, right? Mm. This was done under Reagan, starting in the 1980s, that those functions were focused there. So I don't really see how any sovereign country can tolerate the presence of these organizations and claim to have independent politics. We're seeing the same thing in Russia with the White Revolution, so-called, now a failure, but attempted by people who were in constant contact with the National Endowment for Democracy. But if there's one thing that, again, I would like to pay attention to, it's this question of the International Monetary Fund. Because the Israel and the U.S., these are known quantities. But the resistance of the Muslim Brotherhood group in the parliament in Egypt against the IMF seems to be very low. Mm. And this will lead ultimately to tremendous problems, because with the IMF, the first loan may have reasonable conditions. It's like a dope pusher who gives the first dose even for free. But once you're in that web of debt, then you don't get out of it. And this is a fateful decision. I think the people in the Egyptian parliament ought to read that recent book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, because that's pretty much how the IMF gets you into the net. And that's happening right now. And I think it's a tragic waste of the potential that is there.
Right. Let's go back to Cairo and discuss this with Mr. Salama. Now, Mr. Salama, something that I guess in Gaza was mentioning as well was the Camp David Accord. When you are speaking of a revision of ties between Egypt and Cairo, do you think that those in power are willing at least to revise the Camp David Accord? The fact that people in Egypt have been saying that this was not an accord that they were in favor of when it happened between the two sides. What do you think? And also the issue of natural gas exports as well.
Actually, this is a very appealing and compelling demand and requirement of the whole Egyptian people concerning the modification, the revising of what you mean, the peace treaty signed between Egypt and Israel in March 1979. The conditions and the provisions of the accord signs between Egypt and Israel actually imposes such restrictions upon the Egyptian sovereignty. That's why I do confirm that the circumstances, I mean the internal domestic circumstances with the unseating of the corrupted regime of Mubarak are the very appropriate circumstances towards the Egyptian pressures upon both of the two nations, I mean two countries, the Israeli entity and the administration of the United States of America. Consequently, I do not think that the SCAF would be so naive and foolish enough not to make use of the changing circumstances in the Egyptian domestic affairs and the circumstances we are suffering from here in Egypt, in particular the economic and the security and safety affairs. That's why the SCAF would actually change its mind and its external policies in regarding the peace treaty to modify and revise the restrictions upon the Egyptian sovereignty and the deploying of the Egyptian armed forces in Sinai.
Right, Mr. Bassous, that brings me to the next question. So basically, looking at the situation here in Egypt, do you think, can we conclude in your analysis that Egypt is going forward with the demands of the revolution and that actually the United States and Israel are among those allies that are going to see their interests rather put in a strain here?
Well, I think, yes, I think we're going to see change in Egypt, but this change will take more time. Egypt was under Hosni Mubarak regime for more than 30 years and was one of the main allies to the United States and Israel. Now the situation is completely changing step by step. We have seen the election and the victory of Islamic movements in Egypt. I think in the next few months we're going to see a new election, a presidential election. It takes another 2 or 3 years. We might see after that Egypt would be strong. Egypt would have control over Sinai. Egypt would have its own full sovereignty. It would be independent economically, politically. And I think the Egyptian people would feel the freedom. Then they can defend their own wills. And I think Egypt would be one of the main players in the Middle East. Egypt should not depend on the fund from the United States, from Israel. Egypt would have to stand on its own feet. And I think the future would be for Egypt in the region. As long as Egypt can can achieve the goals and the objectives of the young people who went for this uprising, where many of them were killed and wounded, to achieve change, political change in Egypt. And I think we're going to see the fruit, and we're going to see the objective, the outcome would come up in the next few years, in which some changes in the Middle East would exist.
Right. In Washington, Dr. Tarpley, speaking about relations with the U.S. here, Dr. Tarpley, can you hear me? All right, it looks like Dr. Tarpley cannot hear us at this moment, so I'll just go to our guest in Cairo and be back with Dr. Tarpley shortly. Mr. Sadama, so basically the question I was going to ask is here, when the parliamentarians are speaking about a cutting of the aid that they're getting from the U.S., does this mean that Egypt is not actually dependent on the amount of aid that it's been getting, and does this mean that America and Israel, as our guests in Gaza were saying, are going to be isolated?
I think that this is just a pressure step against the United States of America oppressing, repressing regime. I do not think that in our current or present situations we can actually be independent in the upcoming actually period of time, short time. However, the popular Egyptian initiatives headed by some Muslim clerks like Sheikh Mohammed Hassan and others, I think that it probably do such a surge and recruit the Egyptian courage, dignity, sovereignty to actually cut off and be independent from any American pressures against our dignity and sovereignty.
And Mr. Sadama, just as your concluding remarks, I'd also like you to tell us, we heard the Parliament Speaker, Saad al-Khatatni, he called the People's Assembly in Cairo as the Parliament of the Revolution. The question is it going to be able to maintain representing the revolution with the current government and even after the transfer of power?
I hope so. And I do not mean the Parliament only, I mean, but also the authorities, the upcoming president, the upcoming also government after the interim or salvation government. Mm-hmm. Because in my view, most of the, officials, even the SCAF, do not recognize what revolution is. That's why the...
Right, Mr. Sadama, I'll just stop you there, if I may. Sorry for interrupting. You're running out of time. I'd just like to put the last question to Washington. Dr. Tarpley, the question is your concluding remarks. Is America getting isolated? Is Israel getting isolated because of this? And is Egypt now not any more dependent on the aid and on the political ties with Washington and Israel?
Well, the problem is, you know, you can drive the devil out through the front door, but he comes back in through the window. And these gestures are certainly completely understandable and generally fine. But when you get the International Monetary Fund coming in, Egypt will very soon go through the experience of every other country in the world, which is when you get the IMF, you don't have sovereignty. Your sovereignty is gone. And you can assert yourself against the U.S. and the Israelis, the International Monetary Fund is as dangerous, and as I say, in this case, more dangerous. If the Freedom and Justice Party, the Muslim Brotherhood, right, if they decide to increase regressive taxes, like a value-added tax,
right,
Dr. Webster Tarpley, I'm afraid I've got to stop you because we've run out of time. Then it's a failure.
Dr. Webster Tarpley, author and historian, joining us there live from Washington. Thank you very much, sir, for your comments. A big thank you as well to our guest in Gaza, Professor Hani Albasous with the Islamic University of Gaza, and our guest in Cairo, Ayman Sadama with the Egyptian Council for Foreign Affairs and Professor of International Law. Thank you very much for staying with us. From me, Homa Lezgi, until our next news analysis, it's goodbye.